discuss the people, places, and events all around Kestrel Country. Thanks for jumping on with us today.
Thank you, Mike. It's great to be here. You know, I was actually kind of remembering back to some of our earlier conversations, me and your conversations, as we were making some early trips out to Moscow and looking at facilities and kind of talking about the real estate situation out there. And you were, I guess what came to mind is you were kind of one of the first folks I had an opportunity to work with out there. So we actually kind of go way back.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah. That was, it was funny that you bring that up, because I was going to, explain that. So my wife for a while would constantly would refer to you as metal business card guy. When I first met you, you handed me your business card. And, you know, it's this fairly hefty metal card. Yeah. I was like, this is the coolest business card I think I've ever received. And it still sits on my desk. So,
oh, that's great. Catherine that's great.
Like, well, would be like, wait, is that metal business card guy? I'm like, yeah, that's him. So,
oh my gosh. Well, that's great. It's, those are, the nameplates that we put on all of our equipment have to be a certain kind of metallic specification. And we found out that this laser etching, machine can print business card sized little plates. And so that's what we've, used. So yeah. That's the backstory there. So that's a mil spec that will never erode under UV or anything. So it's
very cool.
A little bit of industry there.
And that was, your business card is a Maddox, industrial transformer. And just kind of where we're here to talk about, and we'll get into that. But maybe to start, you know, what, where did you grow up? I like to always kind of get a little background on folks. Where'd you grow up?
And
schooling,
sure,
that kind of thing.
Yeah, here's some origin story there. I grew up in small town Texas, homeschooled kid. I was the oldest of seven kids. Grew up in a really entrepreneurial family. My dad was very encouraging of the trades and small business, and really kind of planted a seed and an inspiration for entrepreneurism, and really kind of a view of life that embraces family and family discipleship and really taking our kind of parental responsibilities with a weighty recognition and that was really impactful for me. You know, my dad has since passed but got to know most of his grandkids. And that's, you know, that's kind of the context I grew up in, and, you know, working in my dad's furniture repair store. You know, when I was 8 or 10 years old, I was, well, I thought I was, in retrospect, I think it was babysitting, but I thought I was working. You do kind of learn things and, you know, working alongside, your father and just kind of seeing a man's world and kind of understanding, or getting exposure to interactions with customers and vendors and, business situations. That's kind of the context I grew up in.
Yeah. So family business, very much not just in name, but family was involved in the business. And was that a long-term family business or something that your dad started?
No, it really, it was something my dad started, and it was very much kind of the solopreneur kind of thing, the self-employment kind of situation. And you know, I've reflected on this in years since that, and the probably the takeaways that I had from those times, as I mentioned, great things about work ethic and small business and all that kind of stuff, but really came away with the realization that there is a certain scale of business, that kind of self-employment kind of thing, where the business owns you. You know, you don't own a business, and it's kind of it was a struggle, frankly. It was, you know, those kind of businesses struggle to be more than a job where the owner, the self-employed individual, ends up kind of having to wear all the hats. And so, even though I'm massively grateful for a lot of that experience, it really did shape the way I came to think about business, a bit of a counterpoint to much of what we see in Christian business circles or small, you know, small business, family business circles. A lot of those kind of exist in a scale that I felt like missed a lot of opportunity to be a blessing to the family, whoever owns it, to employees, you know, key leadership, you know, members of the community, customers. I feel like there's really a opportunity for entrepreneurs to really aspire to a larger scale business and kind of paradoxically see better family life balance and you know, whatever measures of success you might have, I've implemented into my life and my business some of these things that I've tried to encourage others to see some of the benefits and blessings of running a business at a larger scale. So yeah. Anyway, that's one little takeaway.
So yeah. That was that you grew up there kind of in the family business doing that. What was the next step and what led into getting into Transformers?
Sure. So went to straight out of high school into running a software development business with another one of my brothers, and kind of did that through the 90s .com boom and bust. This was kind of doing e-commerce kind of things when that wasn't a commoditized service. You know, there wasn't, you know, sign up for Shopify kind of things. You know, this was kind of a very Wild West kind of era when you kind of rolled your own, you know, e-commerce platforms. And so we did a lot of work and consulting along those lines. One of the clients that we acquired was in this this transformer, electrical transformer business, and I began to learn a lot about that. And wasn't, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, you plan your way, but the Lord directs the steps. I didn't set out to get into the transformer business, but really got involved with this client. They asked me to come on board full time and really just work my way up through the ranks there. And so I was an employee at that business from basically the late 90s until 2014. So I had almost 20, I think I had 17 years there and worked up to the executive team. And I was, I was slated to, I had discussions with the owner of the business at the time about the succession plan, the business. And I was planned over the next few years to take over as CEO. That was my stated career plan, and they paid my way through Harvard Business School gave me some great career development opportunities. And the plan was kind of the older guys would step out in a course of time and us younger guys would step into place. And that nice and tidy succession plan really entirely fell apart. And there was relational discord in amongst the three senior guys, and that totally fell apart. And kind of the guy that you would have just kind of the way the cookie crumbled, the guy that got ended up in control of the business needed to sell it. He wasn't really viable for him to hold it together alone. So business sold to private equity group, and got to kind of walk through that experience, and see, even before the paint's dried on that, the cultural implications of all of that. And one of those implications was letting me and my entire team go. So I was able to now reflect on it as the best, worst thing that ever happened to me. So I,
and now was that, when you say team, so you were working in, it was kind of software development. You were helping them with that side of the business, and then up in the leadership. Is that what were you doing for that time?
Yeah, so I was the CIO. So it was more around, it was leading the technology end of the business, but in a non-technology business, that's more business process. Mm-hmm. And so that was really key to giving me a real intimate understanding of the business. Whereas if I maybe had other posts, I wouldn't have had the same visibility. But, over the course of almost 20 years, I ended up working, I worked in sales, I worked in, I had a lot of, you end up getting around in a, in a career path like that. So I had a pretty good grasp of the business. And then I had really, with my hopes and dreams then dashed, but be the next CEO and to lead the company, I kind of had my thoughts and plans on what would I do? How would I do this differently? How would I improve on the good and reform or discard the parts that I felt like needed it. And so put out on the street, I was able to really clean sheet and put this company together from the ground up, made some calls, got a little bit of private investment money, just an individual, a couple of individual investors. And then a little bit of my own money, and bootstrapped, from there. And, just to kind of fast forward, 10 years later, we have about a third of the U.S. market share with the largest, company in our space. We've eclipsed the old company I was with. And in fact, there was kind of the big three, when we started the company, and the biggest two have merged, we've still surpassed them in our market, wow. in our target market. So 10 years it's really been
when you started it.
Yeah. 10 years.
Yeah.
10 wow. years ago. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And where did you start Maddox?
Geographic. Yeah. So we, Yeah, started here in Vancouver, Washington. But our first facility, so they fired me in January, started the business in February. And this is just me and my brother selling transformers out of the spare bedroom. This is kind of, you know, we're really just kind of barely getting things set up. But we, by April or May, we had opened our first facility in South Carolina, and we moved out there for 3 or 4 years to get that first facility off the ground. I guess 4 years after that, we opened our facility back here in Battleground, Washington. Battleground is a small town just right outside of Portland, Oregon, right outside of Vancouver, Washington, if this area. So Battleground, Washington is just a great, great little small town, conservative town, just kind of small town America, which was a little foreign to me growing up in small town Texas. I thought this was kind of the liberal West Coast, and it was quite refreshing, and we absolutely love Battleground. But started this facility out here. We moved back out here an alignment for our business plan. We had targeted a national market from the beginning and needed a West Coast location, but also wanted to raise our kids in an extended family context. My wife's family and our siblings are out here, so kids have cousins and aunts and uncles and grandparents. My folks moved out here. My dad just before he passed, and then my mom is still here, as well as my wife's parents. So the church here was going through transition, and we really wanted to be a part of that effort. So that's a little glimpse into our life.
Yeah.
Here in Battleground, I can talk about that, but in terms of the business, yeah. So started in first facility in South Carolina, then back here in Battleground, Washington. Then offices. We've got some folks in Houston, Texas, Moscow, Idaho. We opened another facility, another full production facility in Batavia, Batavia, Ohio, which is right outside of Cincinnati. That's where we're at today. We opened two more facilities in South Carolina after that. So there's really kind of three facilities in a separate office. So we're in four places in Greenville County, a little bit spread out, but anyway.
And how many employees today?
Yeah, we've got about 250 people. Probably the majority of those are, South Carolina. I think we've got about 75 here in Battleground. Maybe 40 in Moscow, a little less in Batavia, some remote and some spread around, but probably the preponderance of the remainder would be amongst the South Carolina facilities.
Gotcha. So I'd probably back up a little bit, kind of back to 10 years ago. Said, started you and your brother selling transformers out of a back bedroom kind of thing.
Sure.
So we should probably, for those who don't know, I guess, so what were you saying? What's maybe define a little bit about the transformer?
Oh, sure.
And who's your customer? What does it look like to have you know, two guys selling transformers out of a bedroom.
Well, it's not, this is not a business that does lend itself to kind of the cottage kind of model. So that's, that was certainly, transitional stage as we were just getting things set up. But to kind of give you some background on what is a transformer and what's the role and then what are the applications. So electricity, is generated, we'll say here in the Pacific Northwest, we have a lot of hydroelectric power. So you have a generating station. And that power is generated at a certain voltage, and it needs to get from source of generation to source of use. And that is a transportation problem. Moving that much energy across that many miles requires you to transform it from a low voltage at which it's generated to a high voltage, which allows it to go cost effectively over miles of wires. And then it gets transformed back down to a lower voltage to where, I can charge my cell phone, whatever the usage is. But that's what transformers do. Our target market is the commercial industrial market. And so while we do work for utilities and electrical cooperatives and places like that, our major emphasis is in the commercial industrial segment. And so that's going to be any large non-utility user of power. Some things that that are maybe a little bit newer in the last 10 years or so, we have a large installation base in cryptocurrency mining. So all this Bitcoin stuff requires a lot of energy. All these AI data centers are absolutely changing the energy landscape of the nation and by just the sheer amount of energy they consume. And so we have massive footprint in those spaces, but then also very traditional large power users. If you're making steel, you have to, melt that steel at very high temperatures. That's all energy consumption. So traditional industry is a major focus that puts us at the forefront of a reshoring American industry. There's a lot of activity right now bringing manufacturing back to the U.S. or at least North America. As Chinese manufacturing kind of falls out of political favor. And this is not this isn't a Republican versus Democrat thing. This is kind of, just global national politics. Both sides of the aisle are moving us rapidly in a direction of bringing manufacturing back to the continent. I say that because we do most of our work is in domestic U.S. based stuff, but there's a tremendous amount of activity in Mexico right now as industry that moved from the U.S. to Mexico to China is moving back to Mexico and some of it back to the U.S. as well. But that we have a lot of interplay there. We do some fun stuff. We do transformers for SpaceX and NASA and some kind of fun stuff like that. But also the new Costco store down the street. Anybody who's going to be a major power user. Yeah, we got about a third of those applications.
Yeah. So they're looking, they need something very specific as far as their energy use. And so then are you manufacturing as well as selling? I know there's some of the remanufacturing, that kind of thing that you do, or is that kind of your niche?
Right. So there's a couple sides of the business. One is, we have contract manufacturing relationships where, our manufacturers build
to our specs, our brand name, they're Maddox Transformers. But we don't own and operate those new manufacturing facilities. We have manufacturing partners for that side of the business. In the remanufactured side of the business, that's what our owned and operated facilities are. And so we have three, four, five of those facilities that focus on remanufacturing, four on liquid filled and one on a dry type, just a different kind of product line. Those facilities take equipment that is nearing end of useful life, and we'll take that equipment out of service. It'll have been in service for 20 or 30 or more years. We'll rebuild it and give it another 20 or 30 or more years. So that remanufacturing part of it is absolutely essential to keep to try to keep up with equipment demand. There's not enough transformers in the world to meet our energy needs right now. And, you know, this sometimes plays out in mainstream news. You know, there's Wall Street Journal articles recently about it. Elon Musk was tweeting about, you know, transformers will be one of the major constraints of economic development over the next few years. So it, our little industry gets a little a headline every now and then. The remanufacturing of transformers is a small but important way to keep more transformers in service, to meet more energy demands, to take care of the aging infrastructure. We've got an incredible we're incredibly blessed with the power infrastructure that we have here in this nation, but it's aging, and it needs a lot of attention, and that's where our business is focused.
Gotcha. Yeah. So then you're able to take in that older equipment and repurpose it for specific customer needs. Are all the transformers you sell, I mean, is it kind of off the shelf type thing, or are most of them, you know, customers need a very specific transformer, something that's a little bit more custom?
Sure. There's kind of a middle area there. There's a few dozen of the most popular kind of voltage and size configurations, and those come in then different KVA classes, basically different power sizes, put it that way. It's not custom in the sense that it's one for one, like when SpaceX needs a new transformer for, you know, the new fuselage plant or something, they don't have to, you know, necessarily have a custom built transformer from that, but it is custom enough that there's a great need for a company like ours that stocks you know, thousands of transformers ready to go. It's a business that requires it does require a lot of know-how on market needs. You know, we kind of try and understand the growth of industry in certain regions, and we know that those regions typically use these certain kind of voltages, and our target customers use these certain size transformers. And so we try and triangulate all that information and try and do the best we can to anticipate demand. Some of that you can kind of get at with data. Some of it you need to, you know, there's some some art to pair with the science to try and understand where demand is going to go. And then you kind of have to reconcile all of that with the world that we live in, with raw material shortages and supply chain, you know, still being supply chain constraints still being a factor in our world. And many times you just build what you can build, or you just recondition the equipment that you can buy. It's an interesting world to live in, but it's just a joy to be in a business that's essential. You know, as we saw through COVID lockdowns, you know, there's this kind of seemingly arbitrary designations. If you're essential, you're not essential. You know, it's not essential to worship God on Sundays, but it is essential to, do this or that. And for what, you know, for good or ill, the powers that be designated our industry as essential, which it is. I agree with that. More of my disagreement would be on things that they say were not essential, right. But the recognition that certain industries are essential, I think, was another kind of takeaway that I had. Another thing that I've really encouraged other entrepreneurs, other believers, particularly, to take into consideration when you're thinking about starting businesses or joining businesses. Is really taking a look at those things that are undeniably essential to our civilization. And I think that is, I think as we kind of try and chart a path in this negative world kind of context, if that reference with kind of Aaron Wren's three right. worlds of kind of the evangelical, you know, recent history makes if that's a lens that you find helpful, which I really do. I think there's a great opportunity for believers in particular to take up significant positions in critical infrastructure and essential services, and really find great opportunities to have a significant impact in their communities by doing that.
Yeah. No, that's really good. Well, and I mean, obviously with, you know, so 40 or thereabout employees in a small town like Moscow, you're having sure. an impact here. And so it's been, when did you open the office here?
Gosh, it's probably... Is it 3 years?
Yeah,
been 3 years
like
back?
2021.
Yeah, that's probably right. As I mentioned, we're in Greenville, South Carolina, Battleground, Washington, Moscow, Idaho, and Batavia, Ohio. These are all locations that we have picked very, very intentionally. We are very much a people driven company. We're very people first. We do with our relatively small team more than companies that have two or three times the number of employees.
Wow.
And we do that by hiring men and women of character, by having, you know, good business processes and, you know, all the kind of necessary stuff that you need to have, but by also really orienting ourselves to intentionally investing in the communities that we're in. We feel like there is that, you know, healthy families and communities, healthy communities are built on healthy families and churches and a whole social fabric that we want to support and contribute to. And so we find ourselves in relatively small towns where there are strong families and churches. And that's kind of You know, that puts us in a place where there's an existent kind of social fabric that we can contribute to and be supportive of. And that's a huge part of our vision. Here at Greenville, I guess Greenville, South Carolina, that's the largest, largest town we're in. But these others, you know, Battleground is about 25,000 people. I think Moscow is probably about the same. Is that Moscow?
Yep.
Okay. Batavia, Ohio. So this is, I think we have a mutual, you probably know Michael Foster. Okay. So he's, out there, in our, he's there in Batavia and, runs that operation, really founding planting these facilities, these operations alongside the presence of strong families and churches is really where my heart has always been. And that's kind of back to my personal mission, which is to spend my life investing in men and women who are building families, churches, and communities. And so that really has a lot of influence in the way Maddox has taken shape and its trajectory over the years.
Yeah. How has that been kind of balancing, managing, you know, people and places all across the country? I know you mentioned that initially you've kind of always had a kind of national market focus. But how has that been, you know, dealing with kind of having management of people all over the place?
Yeah. Well, in a real contrast to what I mentioned before about the solopreneur or the small business, the really individual centric business that you have at a small scale, at this kind of scale, it's with entire reliance on good management and folks who have joined the business over the years, who have taken on tremendous amounts of responsibility and are leading well with that. Like we were talking about this Batavia facility being the last one, the most recent full facility we've put on board. We've got a strong leader out there. Michael has had experience with the company prior to moving out there. We relocated a operations manager. Caleb Servant was here in Battleground and moved his family out there to run that operation from the production side of things. And so we have taken what we you're asking about, you know, so how do we manage this across, you know, these locations? We have usually taken a colonization kind of approach, where we will take folks who kind of know the Maddox way and move them out to this other location to kind of seed and to start up the facility. We found that to be a real accelerator to the growth. So that's one thing that's kind of in our model. But it's, you know, it's not all easy. There's hiccups, and starting a new facility is fraught with learning opportunities. So we're still figuring it out as we go.
Yeah. Well, so you're still figuring out, but still growing.
Sure.
What are the challenges to that? Is I know a lot of folks having trouble finding people. Has that been a challenge for you all?
You know, we've been really blessed to have a tremendous amount of word of mouth, and so I'll kind of say yes and no. We love like employee referrals, and we've got a lot of we've actually got quite a bit of families even in the business, where, you know, we've got, you know, brothers or brother and sister or husband and wife and a number of fathers and sons, that are working in the business. And so that's a joy, but we are hiring, you know, I think we hired 70 or 80 people last year and probably 100 people before. Maybe we haven't quite broke 100 in a year yet, but we're hiring somewhere on that order of magnitude. So yeah, that's hard. And we were early. Actually, I think we may have been the first non-Idaho company on Red Balloon. And so, you know, that's just been a great story to watch and to see that. But we've got, you know, there's certain positions that are that we have many hundreds of applications for, and others we're looking for a key executive position right now to replace our outgoing CFO. You know, that's a tougher position to fill. Yeah, it is in terms of your question of is that a constraint? It's certainly something we want to take our time in and make sure we get the right people. So we've been fortunate to hire we try to hire it always feels like you're behind. We need more people. We need more people. But I think as a whole, we've done a pretty good job of, we've doubled the business every 12 to 18 months for 9 years. So it's, you know, it's always a struggle. Yes. But I guess if I was to speak to probably that personnel issue, maybe more broadly and for either job seekers or for, folks starting businesses and looking to hire folks, this is a great time to be a believer, to be a Christian in business with a Christian worldview, because I think a lot of the romance of the self-employment thing, I feel like has kind of maybe worn off a little bit in our community for good reasons. And we're now kind of seeing the strength and the opportunity and the advantages of, instead of, hey, it's just, you know, me and my wife, or maybe my kids someday in this little cottage industry thing, we now kind of have models and visions of, hey, what is it like to work shoulder to shoulder with 100 or 250 other men and women who are, you know, going in the same direction, who, you know, kind of, you know, value what I value, or have, you know, have a worldview, have an outlook on life that is supportive of family and is in some way gives you a sense of camaraderie, and like I said, shoulder to shoulder with those who want good for you and your family, is an incredibly powerful thing. Mm-hmm. And so, is it hard to find good people? Sure, but this is a good time. I think there are certain business people who recognize this opportunity. I think there's certainly a segment of the world that wants to work in that kind of situation. And when we put our hands to the plow, so to speak, we can do incredible things. And this is kind of, you know, the Maddox story is one of those, you know, in a small way, kind of things that you can see, kind of the fruit that's born of those kind of perspectives.
Yeah, no, that's wonderful. That's encouraging. And yeah, it kind of reminds me of that difference, like what you were talking about, the cottage, small solopreneur, versus larger business and what you can accomplish is similar to, you know, there's probably a lot of the conservative movement in the past. There was like the, you know, prepper solo guy out in his cabin, you know, kind of idea that people were attracted to. It's like, it doesn't work. You know, you need community and seeing the importance of community, working alongside and what you can accomplish and what you can stand together for. Seems to be people are realizing that kind of reminding me of that.
I think you're putting your finger on exactly that sense. And there's many good and admirable things about some of that sense. And this is very much the context I grew up in. So there's a desire to, there's a good and well-placed desire to be good at your craft and to have a skill and have a trade that produces resilience and independence for yourself and your family. Those are all really good things, but there can often be a missing element of community and working alongside, others I'm just excited to see a rediscovery of that and a kind of a concept of a productive household that is not intrinsically isolationist. I think there's a number of stories we can look to going on right now that where folks are putting that into action.
Well, no, that's awesome. And I think we're out of time. Definitely want to be cognizant of that. It's been really, really fascinating and interesting and good to learn about. You know, our podcast is really about this area, and we see the changes you've made to that building. More and more people walking around with those cool orange M's on hats and jackets. And you guys do a great job with branding. And so it's fun to hear and hopefully share with some of your folks about, you know, what is going on up there? What is Maddox? What do they do? And
You bet. No, well, thank you so much for that. We've got marketing is head up by Miles Whitling, who is actually there based in Moscow. So Miles is much to credit for making us keep us looking good. So I'm really grateful for that.
Well, thanks again, Camden. Appreciate it. And for anybody curious about opportunities, that kind of thing, MaddoxTransformer.com. Check you guys out. Or on Red Balloon, right?
Please do.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, Camden. Thank you so much.
Have a good rest of your day.
Great talking to you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Thanks. Take care.
Thanks for joining us. Like, share, subscribe. We'll see you next week.